The title of your work is Capacity for Urban Eden, Human Error. And this Eden isn't a reference to the biblical Eden, to the biblical garden, but it stands for the Eden growth model, a surface fractal that has been witnessed both in bacterial growth and urban sprawl. Could you explain this algorithm to us?
Yes. So my understanding of this algorithm is that the person who discovered it, his last name is Eden, and he was looking at bacterial colonies and how they form, and he was seeing very mathematical patterns emerging that looked kind of like a bloom in many directions, and it was a branching fractal. And so he watched these bacteria as they grow over time and started to plot an algorithm that would be able to simulate on a computer what's happening in this bacterial petri dish, this colony of bacteria basically living in a petri dish. So then I found out from a friend of mine about a writer named Philip Ball, and he has a book called The Self-Made Tapestry, and he finds a reference to how cities and urban sprawl moves and how also bacterial colonies grow. And the basis for the algorithm has to do with this idea of something is looking for space, and it has the resources to grow, but it has to be from an existing neighbor or from an existing development. So in an urban sprawl metaphor, it would always be branching basically outward from the center and also in a bacterial colony. So it's basically looking for space, and if it has resources to grow, then it grows outward off of a most recently established space. And I chose to have, it could go in many directions. Bacterial colonies can go in any direction, so can cities, but I chose to have the algorithm draw in 8 directions. And this is why it starts to look kind of like a compass or a map, because it has north, south, east, and west, and then the in-between as well, so northeast. As you know, all 8. So the cardinal directions are there, and also the middle directions. Mm-hmm. So 8 total directions.
And it also grows from the middle to the outside.
Yeah, and then basically it just chooses what angle it should move at. So it'll either move north, or it'll move northeast, or it'll move south, or it'll move southwest. But basically it's using that to decide.
But anyway, it's still interesting that even if we understand Eden as the biblical garden, it still makes sense in a way. Were you aware of this ambiguity of the title, or is it just...
Yeah, I was aware of it. I did like this idea of saying urban Eden and writing human error also after it, and I did that on purpose because, first off, to explain how the title works, in programming, in a Java program, you have something inside of parentheses, and what that means is what's outside of the parentheses gets multiplied by what's inside of the parentheses. It's the same in algebra, too. So what I'm saying is there's a capacity for urban Eden, as well as there's a capacity for human error. And I'm kind of getting at the idea of how do we handle having this knowledge of being able to mathematically map something to be like nature when also we're instinctively being like nature, and the kind of errors that can happen because we can watch ourselves doing something natural.
So this error can be understood as a counterpoint to the perfection of Eden. How do you look on the role of error in art? Because, for example, in your work growth pattern, it's quite significant.
Yeah, with the decay and the mold. Yeah. So I guess I definitely use error as a counterpoint when I'm structuring systems. So...
And also here, we were watching these glitches.
Yeah, sometimes the machine messes up. I think it's just infinitely more interesting when I can't predict what's going to happen. And in this case, if the machine drew exactly what we see a computer draw when it simulates the fractal, then it wouldn't have that point of doing it in reality. So what I like about drawing this algorithmic graphic in reality are all of those glitches that happen.
The video at the exhibition states that the viewer is confronted with a juxtaposition of cold mechanical high technology with organic landscape, which is messy. But on the other hand, as you said before, there are some patterns in nature which are quite exact. So how do you look on this ambiguity in nature?
Yeah, it's my favorite thing to look at. I think one of the main reasons to try and structure plant life into a pattern is to create visual scenarios where we can see the predictability of an organism. In fact, the seeds that I'm using, they are very timed. They have a life cycle, and they call it a life cycle for a reason, because it's almost always at 3 days this happens, and almost always at 2 weeks this happens. And that, in a way, is very, like you said, algorithmic.
I like what you said about the physical universe itself becoming the artist's operating system. Are there, in your opinion, any similarities between your work and animation?
Yeah, definitely. I don't know how conscious I was at the time that that's what I was doing, but yeah, I mean, it's definitely looked at as being a generative image, and it's not generating itself because of a computer program only, but it's generating itself also because of the living organisms that are in the projects.
So, but there is also time.
Yeah, it's time-based and it's visual. So, and I would say it's more like animation than kinetic sculpture, probably because I'm so interested in the visual patterns, and they're very two-dimensional at this point. So even though I make sculptures, there's always this kind of flatness.
Do you think this could be influence of your artistic education?
Definitely, yeah. When I first started to be an artist, I didn't have access to construction tools and things for building things, and for whatever reason I was more drawn to coloring. And so I painted a lot, and that was why I wanted to, I think, or why I still think about things in terms of a two-dimensional composition, even though it's time-based.
So as we're talking about time, your work Growth Pattern was made especially for the exhibition called When Process Becomes Paradigm. Could you say that your work, in fact, deals a lot with the question of time?
Definitely, yeah. Cycles, time, predictability, and yeah, the juxtaposition of that with something that is technological or somehow a human construction.
And how your older works were questioning this?
Well, there was a need when I was painting for me to have multiple points in time be expressed in the paintings I was making. And this you can see in other types of paintings too, like the Vanitas painting that show the full life cycle of a plant in a painting. And I guess that might be why I was motivated to have time in this work.
But this Vanitas painting also reminds us of death. So is this also here?
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, it's funny because the exciting, like, ooh, time of the projects are often when people are seeing something grow. But there's this counterpoint of it being ephemeral and that it will decay. And in some cases, it's what brings the art to the work in a lot of ways, because then people understand, oh, this person isn't trying to make some new technology, but
something just beautiful,
yeah,
these patterns.
Yeah, but rather that this other layer of thinking about patterns and how they change and disappear.
Why did you decide to study biology and to go into that field?
So
from someone who paints.
Yeah, exactly. And it was mostly this frustration with feeling like my medium wasn't interesting. I didn't want to be mixing paint. I felt like it was too, eventually I got tired of it. Sorry, I should rephrase that. I didn't really say that right. The reason I moved on from painting wasn't because I got tired of mixing paint. I moved on from painting because it wasn't the right medium to express time, I didn't think. And I felt technology was a better medium for that. I'll say I preferred learning about all of the things that make all of the mechanics and the processes and the things that we have learned about biological systems are, to me, much more fascinating to study and employ in my artwork than computer programming. And so in, as a result, when a viewer is interested in my work because it's art and they're drawn to it and they want to see it and look at it, they also can't help but learn something there that maybe they didn't know or they forgot that they learned.
So that's the educational part.
Yeah.
Of your work.
I feel that this makes, there's this educational component to my work in that way, because it's not just a picture that somebody's thinking about, but they actually ask questions about the material and how it works. And those are similar to the questions I'm asking when I make the works. Mm-hmm. And so the audience ends up learning, or can, if they're interested, learn things that a picture can't offer, I don't think.
And last time there was a gentleman who was very interested in the seats.
Yeah, in fact, he asked a lot of questions that I couldn't answer. And well, that was mostly to do with my development of the project. My decision to put seeds into the mixture came later on in the development of the work. But he was asking questions about how the seeds came into existence, which are really great questions. Because they're rapid cycling, and mm-hmm. so he wanted to know whether or not they were genetically modified, and if they were, which genes were altered. My understanding is that they were selectively bred to have certain traits, so recessive traits were accentuated. So if basically they saw the plant growing small, then instead of saying, oh, it's a dwarf, we don't want this, they cultivated it. And that's why the seeds are now petite. And
but also fast.
They're also very fast. And so I can't say for sure whether or not this was genetic engineering or if it was selective breeding. But either way, it was a human being with an agenda who set out to, or a group of human beings who set out to, find where the plasticity of this organism is and push it into an extreme place.
Do you think this new interest in biology also changed you as a person?
Yeah, I guess I definitely feel more, I feel more engaged in understanding the physical world more. Maybe. Yeah. I mean, I was a really philosophical person before biology. I mean, I still am. But now it's nice to balance it with this balance the metaphysical with the physical, basically. And also to see parallels between that space and the concrete space that we're in. But yeah, the connection between the metaphysical and the physical is maybe the best, simplest way to explain it. That's how it's changed me. That now, I guess, instead of thinking about things abstractly, I'm thinking about things abstractly with the physical elements of the universe.
And this is probably also what you're investigating in your art.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm sure that it's happening intuitively as people are engineering things and making decisions about environments. So I'm kind of saying I'm not intuitively doing this, but rather I'm looking at the abstraction and its physical appearance and just directly putting them right next to each other to be thought about and investigated, as you said.
So if you compare growth pattern and capacity for, how did the idea develop?
Yeah, so with the original intention with Capacity for Urban Eden Human Error was to create a plant tissue printer. And the reason that I wanted to do this was because I learned about the mechanisms of plant cells, and I discovered that they, well, someone else discovered, but I read that they are totipotent. And totipotency basically means that any cell in a plant can become any organ in a plant. And it happens through a process called differentiation. And differentiation happens because of the amount of plant growth regulators, or what we can understand as hormones, present in the cells. So basically, you can manipulate what organ is produced from a cell depending on the ratio of plant growth regulators that you give to these cells. And so my idea was to have an engineering system that is plotting these cells and then determining where the pattern should differentiate based on this algorithm that would be coming from a computer. And the growth pattern project was kind of a counterpoint to it, because in the process of making capacity, I found out how hard it is to keep plant cells from getting contaminated. And so I realized that if I was going to have this big 3D printer, that I couldn't use plant cells anymore. And I still, though, had this great strong desire to see plant tissue in a pattern, in a plotted or, you know, human construction. And so that's why I went the route of, instead of an additive process where I'm dropping layers, a subtractive process where I'm removing the shape from the existing organism and then culturing it. So that's how those two projects are linked.
What do you think is the most common misconception of your art?
Yeah, I can definitely say that in the bioart field, there's a movement that's very strong for having a political agenda. And I guess that's where I think my work gets the most misunderstood. Because it's not that I don't think about politics and don't care about politics, it's just not my primary motivator. And my motivators are more aesthetic and more philosophical, and the values that I'm questioning, I'm doing in a very almost ambiguous manner. And so for that reason, I do get all kinds of responses to my work. People wonder if I just think technology is cool, or if, I don't know, I'm making something for a home, and or if I'm just making something beautiful. Or maybe they're wondering why I'm not addressing whether or not it's right or wrong to be manipulating organisms. Mm-hmm. And the reason that I'm not dealing with that is because I think that people who are thinking about that are going to bring that to the work anyway because it's a living organism. And I feel like there's already so much amazing work being done about whether or not things should be manipulated in this way or not. And I always know that the scenarios I'm creating are contained. So they can exist in, even though they're using the elements of the physical universe, they can be contained in an abstract space, in a sensual space that is for observation. And so it's basically another way of looking at this problem and kind of not being inflammatory with it, but also so I guess that's where I can get confused mm-hmm. for some people, because they think maybe I don't have an opinion on it, but my opinion is just very complex. And I guess I'm more interested in seeing how these things are connected than necessarily just saying one's right or wrong.
Yeah,
it's very complex. And obviously, we've already manipulated nature in so many ways. And I think that one layer is really important. And there are lots of great works by people who make political bioart. Adam Zaretsky is one of my favorites. But because of the work he's already done, my work ends up being in a dialogue, but it's not necessarily covering the same ground or asking the same questions.